It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Lake Superior is the largest of the Great Lakes and the second largest body of fresh water in the world. Researchers and officials are meeting this week in Ashland to consider a plan for the future of Lake Superior, with a focus on clean land and water. We'll find out about the goals and challenges involved with this effort. What do you want to be done to protect land and water quality in the Lake Superior Basin? How do you want the community to be involved? Let us know, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email address is ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Valerie Dempstra is a natural resources educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension and is based in Ashland. Valerie, thank you for joining us.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for having me.
Talk to us about the Lake Superior Collaborative Symposium. Who attends this and why?
Sure. Well, Lake Superior Collaborative Symposium started yesterday, will be concluding today. And it's a gathering of primarily natural resource professionals that are working in the Wisconsin's portion of the Lake Superior Basin to protect and restore the land and the water of the basin. So we have a group of folks from the state, federal, tribal agencies, local governments, the nonprofits in the area that are working on watershed issues, and we are trying to work in a coordinated effort to make sure that we all know and understand what's going on, and that we know who's doing what work in what places, and how we can best work together and be most efficient with our work and also with the dollars that we have to spend on this.
Is this a symposium a regular event, or is this the first one?
Well, it's the first one that we're calling the Lake Superior Collaborative, but there have been sort of different iterations of partnerships in our part of the world over the last several years. So a previous iteration was called the Shawamigan Bay Partnership, and so we've held two previous symposiums under that umbrella. And now we're starting to sort of broaden our reach a little bit more to cover more of the whole swath of Wisconsin's portion of the basin.
Part of your conversation at this symposium included changes in conditions in the Lake Superior watershed, which I don't think most people understand how really small that watershed is. Share a few of those changes with us.
Well, I think that people maybe are seeing those changes. I mean, I think one of the biggest things that we're seeing and the things that we've talked about a lot are the more frequent intense storm events that have been happening. If you are in the Duluth area, you probably remember the storm from 2012. In 2016 and 2018, there were portions of Douglas, Ashland, and Bayfield counties that were devastated by the flooding. And the result of that is we get road washouts, we get culverts blowing out, bridges are blowing out, landscapes are being flooded, wind events are blowing trees down. So it's really changing how, as natural resource managers, we're thinking about how are we helping to protect and restore the land and water in the basin? Because the conditions that were present, you know, even 10 years ago are very different now. And this is something that we are feeling is not going to change or go away. And so we have to start thinking about how do we adjust and adapt to these new conditions as we move forward.
In this most recent storm, we actually saw coastal flooding in Duluth, which is something that, and I've lived near Lake Superior for most of my life. I don't remember ever seeing that more than once in, say, 50 years, and we saw it just recently. So a lot of things seem to be changing in our weather and the way the lake reacts to it. We're talking with Valerie Damstra, natural resources educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension, who is based in Ashland, where researchers and officials are meeting this week to consider and plan for the future of Lake Superior with a focus on clean land and water. What do you want to be done to protect land and water quality in the Lake Superior Basin? How do you want the community to be involved? Tell us your story. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org or on Twitter. It's at WPR Mornings. Let's talk some more about those extreme storms and the flooding we've seen. How did all of that displaced sediment impact the lake, and what about the basin overall?
Yeah, sure. So, for those of us who live in Ashland and in the Shawamigan Bay area, it's not uncommon to see after a storm event see the bay turn brown or red. There are reasons for that. The soil types that are in the Shawamigan Bay region are a mixture of sand and clay, and so they are very highly erodible to begin with. And we're still seeing erosion effects from the logging cutover that was about 100 years ago. We're recovering from that, but we're still seeing some of those effects from that even today. But now with these extreme weather events where we're getting more frequent storms and much more higher amounts of rain in shorter amounts of time, that's exacerbating those conditions. And so particularly for us in Shawamigan Bay and around the Bayfield Peninsula, we're seeing, the bay turn brown, and it's taking a lot longer for that sediment to dissipate because there's just so much of it. We're seeing nutrients that are getting washed into the lake, and so we're seeing presence of harmful algal blooms around Cornucopia and around the Apostle Islands, which we didn't see before. Those are a couple of examples of things that have changed that we just haven't really had on our radar in the last few years, but there are things that we need to learn more about and learn and try to figure out what the effects are going to be in the long term and how do we help mitigate that.
How do you adapt to this as a natural resource community?
Well, that's a great question. So there are one of the things that is we're finding very valuable, particularly with this symposium, is that it's an opportunity to bring people together who are taking a look at this from all different angles. And there are some really talented researchers and people developing tools to help us with what we're calling climate change adaptation. So we have a presentation coming up today with somebody from the Northern Institute of Applied Climate Science based out of Houghton, Michigan, and they've developed some tools to help recommend different types of applications to the land with these changing landscapes. And so it's basically we have to sort of change the framework. Some of the practices that we've done maybe 10, 20 years ago aren't necessarily going to be the things that work today. That's why we need to get together and try to figure out as a group, what should we be doing? And there's a lot of work that's helping guide us that way, but there is still a lot that's unknown. But the only way that we're going to be able to tackle this is through this collaborative effort.
And what would success look like here?
Success. I mean, I think something for us that we've been working with in the Shawamigan Bay for a long time is really trying to reduce that amount of sediment that's going into the bay. We would love to see the bay less brown less frequently. But I think what's most important for us is we want to make sure that we are helping to protect protect our water quality, not only for the sake of the ecosystem, but for public health. You know, we want to see less beach closures. We want to see less algal blooms that could be harmful. We want to help local managers or local officials figure out how to make their infrastructure more stable so that they're not having to deal with culverts blowing out every time we get a big rain. So there's more implications than just the ecological benefit of the lake. But if our success can also contribute to public health benefits, local government benefits, local official benefits, and citizen benefits, ultimately, that's mm-hmm. really what we're going for.
And we're going to talk about all of that stuff as our conversation continues, Valerie. You mentioned algae blooms a couple of times. We're hearing more about that, and nutrients eroding into the lake causing this. Why are these harmful, and what can be done to prevent them?
Well, one of the reasons that they can be harmful is there are certain types of algae that contain toxins that can be dangerous for public health. If somebody gets ingests the algae while they're swimming, it can be really toxic. What we're seeing so far, though, the preliminary research is that the green algae blooms that we're seeing that have been popping up around Cornucopia and sort of in that Apostle Islands area do not contain those toxins at this point, but that doesn't mean that that there isn't potential for that in the future. We want to try to be proactive.
Okay, well, let's talk about how to prevent them in just a moment. Valerie Damstra is a natural resources educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension based in Ashland. We want to hear from you about what you think needs to be done to protect land and water quality in the Lake Superior Basin. 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. This is the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Researchers and officials are meeting this week in Ashland to consider a plan for the future of Lake Superior with a focus on clean land and water. We're talking about the goals and challenges involved with this effort. What do you want to be done to protect land and water quality in the Lake Superior Basin? How do you want the community to be involved? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Valerie Damstra is a natural resources educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension based in Ashland, and she's here to talk to us about this today. Valerie, we were talking about algae, and we know how it gets there. We know how it can be harmful. What can we do to prevent it happening more frequently?
Well, that's one of the things that researchers are trying to sort of figure out. So there's not only the issue of, trying to reduce the amount of the phosphorus that's getting into the lake to, you know, which is sort of what feeds the algae. But we also need to figure out what is the source of the algae. Where is it coming from? Is it actually in the lake itself, or is it coming from the streams that are draining into the lake? And we're not exactly sure about that yet. Because what's really interesting about the algae blooms is that Lake Superior is not a place where you would typically think this would happen because of how cold the water is. But there are, with the changing weather patterns, water temperatures are rising, and so it's starting to create this environment for algae where we didn't used to see it before. Now, what's sort of interesting, too, is that, the Shawamigan Bay area is a lot warmer in the bay, and there are nutrients and sediment coming into the bay with these storm events as well, but we're not seeing algae blooms in that area. And we think the reason for that is because of the amount of sediment is actually kind of like turning the lights out, because algae is a plant, right? So it needs sunlight to help grow. So with that sedimentation and the brown water, it's not allowing those conditions for the algae to proliferate in the bay at this point. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting thing that researchers are sort of taking a look at.
Let's take a phone call. James is with us from Wakefield, Michigan. James, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, and thank you. I live in Wakefield, Michigan. We're about 40 miles east of Ashland, about 17 miles inland from Lake Superior. I'm totally in love with Lake Superior, spend as much time as possible on the lake, and I think there's something that every citizen can do, and that's just simply do not litter. There's so much litter on the ground. We have a lake in our town. Obviously, it all ends up in Lake Superior eventually, in the plastic, the styrofoam, and my real pet peeve, cigarette butts. It just drives me crazy when I'm out running around, walking around the lake, picking up especially the cigarette butts. People, something that every person can do, do not litter. And think about our Lake Superior when we do this.
James, thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Valerie, James, with a practical suggestion for everybody who's walking around, pick something up and throw it away, or, you know, don't leave it on the ground to begin with.
Absolutely. And James, thank you so much. And, you know, it's good to hear that you love Lake Superior. That's why we live here. The lake is really one of the touchstones of our community. So I think that's a great practical suggestion. And, you know, I would encourage folks to, you know, tune in with, you know, what are your local nonprofit organizations working on? There are groups like there's the Superior Rivers Watershed Association based out of Ashland, but they cover the Douglas, Bayfield, Ashland, and Iron counties, and they help to organize roadside cleanups. I know in the city of Ashland, we organize a couple times a year beach cleanups to help clean up that debris and cigarette butts off the beach. So, you know, there are opportunities out there for citizens to get involved in an organized way. But, yeah, simply just if you're out, take a trash bag and help pick up. That's awesome. So thanks.
Let's talk a little bit about the conference. There are a few speakers at the conference talking about wetlands. Why are wetlands mm-hmm. so important?
Wetlands are amazing. So, you know, one of the issues that I mentioned is, you know, we've got this, even before we started kind of dealing with these more extreme rain events, is that we do have a problem with sedimentation and erosion into the Shawangan Bay in particular because of the erodible soils. And so one of the mantras that we have in our natural resource community around here is what we call it slow the flow. And so what that means is that if we can slow the runoff, so the rain comes down, hits the land, and then runs off and heads to the nearest stream. If we can slow that flow to the stream, therefore we can reduce the sediment and the erosion that's happening downstream. And wetlands play an amazing role in that. If we can conserve wetlands, restore wetlands in the right places on the landscape, they can be a tremendous benefit to holding a place to hold that water, and it keeps it holds it on the landscape, and then allows it to slowly release into the stream rather than getting that whole deluge all at once. And so they're a really tremendous tool for us when we're thinking about slowing the flow and reducing erosion.
Valerie Dempster, so much more to talk about here, but we are up against a time crunch. Valerie, so much to do. Valerie Dempster, natural resources educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension based in Ashland, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Wisconsin's voter turnout in the last election was as low as it's been for any presidential contest in the past 16 years, and predominantly black neighborhoods in Milwaukee reported some of the biggest declines. If history is any guide, even more will stay home for the upcoming midterm election. Hemina Condi reports on efforts in Milwaukee's Black community to change that.
Derek Etherly is one of several canvassers going door-to-door in a predominantly Black neighborhood on Milwaukee's north side. He's never done this before.
I'm a member of Community of Grace Baptist Church representing Souls to the Polls.
Etherly is working with a group called Souls to the Polls that recruits canvassers at churches.
Are you aware of the election that's November 6th?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sometimes it's an easy sales pitch. The woman at this house tells Etherly she always votes.
November 6th then. All right, thank you.
Other times, canvassers have their work cut out for them. One of the people they pass is 34-year-old Derek Montgomery.
I did vote 2012. I did not vote in 2014. I am the problem.
And you didn't vote in 2016?
No, I did not vote in 2016 either.
Montgomery says he won't vote because he doesn't think it will make a difference.
I feel like it's they got their own little thing that they want to do, their own agenda that they got going, and that's what they're going to push no matter who's in office.
City election data shows a 14 percentage point drop in voter turnout in this neighborhood between the 2012 and 2016 election. Anita Johnson, who leads canvassing efforts for Souls to the Polls, blames a couple factors. 2016 was the first election requiring voter ID in Wisconsin. Johnson said that created confusion.
Some people think you need a voter ID card instead of a driver's license or a state ID.
Johnson thinks the 2016 candidates for president also played a role.
Other people just didn't like the candidates that were running, so they felt like, well, I'm not going to vote.
That could have played a factor with 29-year-old Remington Duke. As two young canvassers with a youth organization approach Duke, he applauds their work but says he won't be voting. Duke says the only politician he remembers casting a ballot for is former President Barack Obama.
I just really don't care who's governor, who's president, who's none of that. Like, oh yeah, it was a hoo-ah for Barack because he was so-called Black, you know what I'm saying? But besides that, I wouldn't care.
Duke says he's busy trying to support his family. He feels whether Democrats or Republicans hold office, his best shot at seeing change in government as a Black man is to leave the state.
By me voting is not going to help. You know what I mean? I need to stay focused on whatever I'm doing and how I'm going to eat, how my kids going to eat, how I'm going to pay these bills.
History suggests turnout will be even lower in the upcoming midterm election than it was in 2016. Races for governor and U.S. Senate don't get as much attention as races for president. Advocates like Johnson say they're not discouraged. And first-time canvasser Derek Etherly says it's his job to get others to believe their vote matters.
A lot of times people think that their votes don't count. But if everybody thought that way, then we would have no one voting.
While elections officials say it's hard to make predictions about turnout among specific demographics, advocates do see a sign for hope. Milwaukee saw a higher than usual turnout in this year's August primary. Organizers are working to continue that trend in November. Hemina Condi, Wisconsin Public Radio.
For additional coverage leading up to the election or to check out candidate interviews, visit wisconsinvote.org.